The Cold Omaha Podcast Network.
Hello, my name is Zachary Bennett.
And this is Tim Fakeless.
And we are your co-hosts for the Wolves Wired Podcast. Be sure to tune in to the Wolves Wired Podcast on Monday mornings. We are part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network. Now back to your regular programming.
Back here for another episode of Midwest Swing, episode number 14. You can find us on Twitter at Midwest Swing Pod. You can find the Cold Omaha Podcast Network at Cold Omaha MN, where we have all kinds of crazy content going on, Minnesota sports related. We got some betting stuff. We got some video game stuff. I will be appearing on the procedurally generated podcast this evening to talk about the new MLB The Show release. I am joined, as always, by Andy Carlson at Andy Carlson Show, and for the first time in Midwest Swing's 14-episode history, we have a repeat guest. It's our favorite teenager, the best teenager we've had on the show, bar none, John Becker of Roster Resource. John, how are we doing this afternoon?
I'm great. Thank you for having me back. I'm glad to be the first repeat guest, make a little history here.
Yeah, you know, we're setting records and breaking down barriers. Happy to have you. I also have a special podcasting partner in a 16-pound grouchy Maine Coon by the name of Oscar, and so I can't promise that he won't interfere with the process today, but if you trust the process, you'll have good results, just like in baseball. So let's hope that it goes well. Before we dive into some baseball talk, I do want to talk about a couple things we've got going on the Cold Omaha Network. If you shop at Amazon, and let's face it, everyone does, you can go to coldomaha.com/Amazon. It will direct you right to the normal Amazon storefront, whether you use Amazon Prime, Amazon Pantry, or if you're just a regular Amazon shopper like most people are. Nothing changes for you, but we do get a little bit of a kickback, and so that's a benefit to the Cold Omaha Network, whether it's podcasts, content, whatever have you. If that's too difficult, you can also just go to coldomaha.com, and there will be copious advertisements that you can click on, and it will do the exact same thing. Cold Omaha thanks you for your support and a few shekels every time that you shop on Amazon. We're coming up to the end of March, which means I believe we're having the end of our promotion with Ticket King. However, if you go to Ticket King online, use the promo code COLD, you can save $10 off a purchase of $100 or more. I might be wrong, but I think that's expiring here in the next day or so, so get on that. But they have tickets to all the major Minnesota sports teams, concerts, theater tickets, you name it. Whatever you want to go see in Minnesota, they've got it. No ticket fees, unlike the big guys, too. So that is Ticket King online, promo code COLD. Okay, so thanks for having some patience with me, John. They're getting through all the necessary business of getting us set up. I understand that you are you on spring break right now? Is that accurate?
I am. I am indeed on spring break. Junior year of high school, so I get a nice break from all of the terrible homework that my teachers give all year long.
The hustle and the bustle. Are you starting to think about college, or are you still a little ways off from that?
Oh, yeah, I'm starting to think about it, but I'm trying to put it off as long as possible and just kind of enjoy life here before I really think about the future.
Is there a possibility that mystery team could come in and sweep you away college-wise, or do you have it pretty well set with where you're thinking about going?
There is. You know, hashtag mystery team is always possible. You know, I haven't completed the research, and yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if some random school just kind of caught my eye.
Yeah, that happened to me. I actually, this will sound crazy, I was planning to go to University of North Dakota, and I don't know what I was going to do, whether it was going to be communications, or I kind of thought I wanted to be a dentist, which is kind of crazy based on where I wound up. But in July, I just changed my mind and reversed course and went to a small Bible college. And the funny thing is, the day that I moved in, excuse me, was the first day that I'd ever set foot on the campus. And so I never took a visit. I just took the word of people that I knew that were going. And so sometimes you make some really big decisions without really thinking about it. And that's kind of been my forte. So whatever you do will be less spur of the moment than me, I think.
Yeah.
So obviously this is a big time of the year for the folks like you, you know, not to group you into any kind of, or, you know, shoehorn you into any part of grouping, but as a roster junkie, you probably have a lot of intrigue with some of these guys that getting cut in the last couple of days, as, you know, the salaries that become guaranteed for the season kind of lock in, and so you've seen some guys get cut here in the last day or so. Who are some of the most surprising ones to you, maybe that you didn't anticipate teams moving on from?
Yeah, so the first guy I want to talk about is James Loney, the first baseman. Had a very good 2014, kind of dropped off a little in 2015, never had power, and then when the hits stopped showing up, he kind of loses his value. He was due just under $10 million for the season, and what was surprising is that the Rays actually did decide that they wouldn't put him on their roster. There had been, you know, rumblings about that all offseason, especially once they acquired Corey Dickerson, that they're just not going to have room for him. But for the Rays to eat $10 million is just shocking, and the fact that they really want to win instead of just going with their one of their highest paid players and just hoping he does okay really kind of shows how committed they are to winning and how interesting the AL East could be with the Rays really going for it and the Orioles, of course, deciding to go for it.
Now, one thing I want to ask is, now, is that $10 million fully guaranteed, or was that an arbitration thing where he gets termination pay? Because I think if they cut him by a certain time in spring training, they only pay a certain percentage. So while the tendering decision is obviously very interesting and a little surprising, do they get off the hook of some of the money, or is it your understanding that they still have to pay him unless they trade him?
He was a free agent contract. He was signed to a 3-year, I believe, $27 million.
I missed that. For some reason, I thought he was still in his arbitration years. I know he's been in the league for a while, but I didn't know if it was more than 6 years.
Yeah, so he's fully guaranteed, so that's a lot of money for any team to eat, and especially a team like the Rays. Now, we look at a guy like Miguel Gonzalez on the Orioles, had a minor league option, due $5.1 million in arbitration. They only have to pay him 25%, so that's a little under $1.5 million that they'll have to pay him now. You know, it's a weird move, especially with how bad the Orioles rotation is, but, you know, they save $4 million after committing $243 million to free agents this offseason. They're going to look to save money wherever they can.
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, I guess it feels a little penny-wise, pound-foolish, but at the same time, if they just were not going to find room for him, and keep in mind, too, if they did not think of him as a candidate for a rotation spot, first of all, how egregious does his quality have to be that they weren't considering him for that with two open spots pending, you know, Kevin Gausman's injury situation and whatever happens with the number five spot. But at the same time, too, it's just if you don't make the Orioles rotation, it's not like you can easily move to the bullpen. They've got a bullpen with four or five guys last year that struck out more than 10 batters per nine. And then I've been talking with some Baltimore guys, and it sounds like they have a bunch of guys who are out of options as well. And so it's a matter of just kind of shoehorning everyone in there. So I think it probably came down to, is Miguel Gonzalez at this price going to be better than Vance Worley at his price? And Vance Worley, for all his warts or the things he can and cannot do, he's cheap. And you know, there's a non-zero chance that he could give you exactly what Miguel Gonzalez would have for a fraction of the money. But, you know, I found it interesting. Dave Cameron tweeted yesterday, and I got to make sure I remember this whole thing. And he said, what's worse if the Orioles give up on you as a pitcher, or it was somebody else as an outfielder, I think it was.
It was the Indians, yeah. So
there you go. Yeah, Cleveland Cleveland as an outfielder. And so, yeah, it was kind of amazing to see that.
Yeah, so it's interesting. This was a cost thing. If they're paying Gonzalez the league minimum, if he's still pre-arbitration, you know, you roll the dice. Clearly, you would send him down to the minors with the option, or you would stick him in your bullpen, or you'd give him a couple turns. But, you know, clearly they don't want to pay him $5.1 million to just be okay, and I understand that. But then they kind of backtrack on it with Hyunsoo Kim, who is due $2 million this year, $5 million next year. That's a nice amount of money, and he's not going to make their opening day roster, as far as we know. They like what Joey Ricard has done. So it's kind of weird that they're being a little hypocritical with what they want to do with their money.
Well, and the buzz is that Kim will accept the minor league assignment and take his money and head on down to AAA. The one thing I do wonder with Kim is, you know, he obviously had a slow start and really didn't impress in the spring. But somebody with a vested personal interest, I follow a few people that follow foreign baseball on Twitter, so I always get some of them kind of confused. But they said the Orioles saw enough from Kim in, it was like 38 plate appearances or 74 pitches that he saw to send him down. And they were talking about how that kind of seems foolhardy. And I'm thinking, well, maybe the answer to that equation lies in what you just said, in that if he only saw 70 some odd pitches in 38 plate appearances, you know, maybe that's the answer you're looking for, and maybe that's why he needs to go down to AAA.
Yeah, and it's not necessarily a byproduct of his performance that I think that it's a bad move. Obviously, he didn't perform well enough. He's hitting, I believe, in the 180s right now in spring training. But the issue is that you're going to hand your starting left field job to a guy in Joey Ricard who performed very well this spring. But I've heard a lot of people say that maybe they're overvaluing him. I mean, he is a Rule 5 pick, and I don't know if you want to hand him your starting left field job, especially when you have so little outfield depth as it is. I don't see why you wouldn't just platoon him and Ricard and see what happens.
So would you have maybe cut Nolan Reimold or something else?
Yeah, I would have done that. I think that Kim's upside is too much. And if you take out the original 0 for 18, I believe he's hitting about 290 this spring. So, I mean, there's certainly some potential there, even if it's just a singles hitter at the bottom of the lineup. And I don't think Nolan Reimold offers that much value as a guy you can't field and only hits lefties and doesn't even hit lefties that well.
Now, to what extent do you think, as we transfer or transition maybe a little bit into Rule 5 guys, but to what extent does Ricard's athleticism, do you think, play up in the fact that, you know, they need two athletes in that outfield if Mark Trumbo is going to play right field regularly?
Yeah.
And Kim was a Gold Glove winner overseas, but I had heard that, below average arm, below average range. And I thought I'd heard somewhere that Gold Gloves were more based on hitting overseas, but I can't remember if I can substantiate that.
Yeah, that's correct. So often the best hitters will get the equivalent of the Gold Glove Awards in Korea. So I wouldn't read too much into that. Sure. As for Ricard, he's got a very high floor because he's fast and he's a good fielder. He's hit 4 home runs this spring, but he's a guy who hit 2 last season in the minors, and I wouldn't expect much power out of him at all. But of the Rule 5 picks, it looks like he's going to have the most playing time available to him at the start of the season, and for a team that wants to contend, that's a pretty good deal for him before, you know, being buried in the minor league system for the Rays.
Do you think he could have a Delino DeShields Jr. level of value to this team, or is that really shooting for the stars?
It's a little bit of overestimate, but I think it's certainly doable. Very similar skill sets, except for, you know, Ricard will be playing in the corner. Won't get quite as many at bats. He'll be hitting in the bottom of the lineup. DeShields, of course, was at the top of the lineup most of last season. But yeah, I think Ricard could do well. It wouldn't surprise me if he hit something like 280, stole 20 bases. I think he's going to be a very useful player. The question is, you know, would Kim have been better?
Yeah, I think somebody had tweeted that the player that the Astros protected instead of DeShields was also making waves, but I'm having trouble remembering. I don't know if you'll remember that either, but it was, I don't remember. I might just be completely striking out here. Is that ringing a bell to you?
Yeah, it doesn't ring a bell to me, but that does bring up a good point about Rule 5, that it is kind of a crapshoot in who you want to protect, and the teams who have just riches in the minor leagues kind of get screwed over by the fact that you can only protect 40 guys. And you see guys, teams like the Rays, they lost both Ricard and Tyler Goodell, who could have a starting spot in Philadelphia just because they have a lot of good minor league depth that needed to be protected.
And before we go down that Rule 5 path completely, is there any other players? You know, we didn't list any in our little run sheet here, but is there any other players that you were surprised did or did not make a roster that come to mind right away? I think in Minnesota, I know a lot of people thought Jose Berrios was going to make the rotation, but I think more notably there, Tyler Duffy getting bumped from the rotation after having, you know, a really nice run last August and September was a little surprising. That's just one that I'm going to hazard as a guess.
Yeah, and I wasn't particularly surprised that Duffy was sent down, you know, judging by the need to kind of hope that Ricky Nolasco fulfills his contract out of the rotation, and then Malone was probably their second most consistent starter last year after Kyle Gibson. But the issue is that you often get managers speaking too soon. And what happened, Paul Molitor said at the beginning of the spring training that Duffy was penciled into a rotation spot, and that might have negatively affected his performance. I don't know if he was working on, you know, some pitches more than others in the spring because he thought he had a spot. But ultimately, we too often see managers kind of handing guys spots before they even have them.
Well, and it sounded like, yeah, the changeup was the big thing for him. It's a similar dynamic. Don't get me wrong. He's not as talented or as gifted as Lance McCullers of the Astros. But it's a similar dynamic where you got guys that there's always that worry about having a third pitch. And that was the knock on McCullers basically coming out of Florida, I think, was that, you know, if he doesn't develop a third pitch, he'll be a great reliever. But is that worth a first round, a high first round pick? You know, the Astros ended up plucking him, I think, in the supplemental round or maybe the second round. But with Duffy, it's fastball and then a really nice curveball. And, you know, there was talk that if he thought he had the spot, he'd work on his changeup in the spring. You know, you look at his rates and they're not very good. You listen to the scuttlebutt from reporters listening to Twins brass, and it sounds like they weren't impressed with his fastball this spring. There, you know, you can kind of piece all that together and see a scenario where you, just like you laid out, you go to spring working on something if you think you've got a spot, only to find out you didn't have a spot. And maybe there's a lesson to be learned there for young players in that, you know, you have to stay hungry in certain ways, even if you think you have a spot, just because there's a finite number of spots and just a huge number of people who are competing.
Yeah, and I wonder if the Twins will kind of give Duffy the McCullers treatment, which was last season in 2014. He had an ERA close to 6 in AA because they just kept forcing him to work on his changeup, and that's how he developed a major league ready changeup. And I'm not sure if they want Duffy to just keep kind of you know, inundating hitters with a third pitch that he doesn't have down in the minors and getting lit up before he learns it. But ultimately, you know, two pitch starting pitchers, it just doesn't work out.
Yeah, and I think the thing there too with Duffy is then there's a future in the bullpen, just like he pitched at Rice, which is not a bad thing, but when you've seen the success he's had, even in a moderately small sample size, you're going to want to find out exactly what you have. Do you think Duffy is the first call-up for the Twins in the need of an arm, or has Berrios leapfrogged him? Now, the one thing that stands out to me is that Berrios is not on the 40-man roster, and that's obviously an important factor. But it also, too, kind of boils down to opportunity. If you have somebody scratched with, you know, a little bit of tendonitis in their elbow and it's going to be a one- or two-start deal, you go get Duffy. If you've got somebody whose arm completely falls off and it's going to be the rest of the season, then you maybe go get Berrios. What's your read on that situation?
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. If it's a temporary thing, I'd go with Duffy. He's more of the shuttle guy. I wouldn't want to, you know, keep moving Berrios up and down and maybe even in and out of the bullpen like the Orioles have done with Kevin Gausman, and that's really hurt his development.
In your opinion, though, how far have the Twins deviated from having their five most talented and MLB-ready starters coming north this spring? Because I'll tell you, you know, if you ask me, their five most talented starters probably doesn't include Nolasco, probably doesn't include Malone. I think it does include Santana, Hughes, and Gibson. But then I think you're either talking some combination of the three of Duffy, Berrios, and May. Where do you lay on that equation?
Yeah, I would agree with you, but then there's also, you know, the variable of how good is May out of the bullpen, and the answer to that is really good.
Like obscenely good.
Yeah, I think he had a K9 over 10 in the bullpen.
It was 10.2 or 10.6, something like that.
Yeah, and I'm in favor of keeping him there just because he was so good. I don't see a point in just making him a middle-of-the-rotation starter, especially with the issues with Perkins and with Jepsen's velocity reportedly being a little low. But yeah, I don't like, you know, the idea of sticking with Malone or Nolasco. I would say pick one and give Berrios or Duffy a shot. I mean, you don't have enough variation in amongst your pitchers. They're all kind of, outside of Santana, kind of, you know, control guys. And ultimately, if you're facing them over a three-game series, it's going to feel like you're facing the same guy all three times. And for the guy who pitches that third game against the same team, that's not going to be particularly fun for him.
No, I think that's a good point, too. I think there's something to be said, too, about the fact that I don't think teams can afford to dig any sort of hole by screwing around with roster decisions this year, just because with 15 teams all expected to be pretty solid in the American League, you know, any sort of hole you dig, even if you're only five games under 500 at the end of April, that means that there's probably 12 or 13 teams you have to leapfrog over the course of the season to get where you want to be in terms of playoff positioning. I think that's, you know, that's a key thing to think about. You know, maybe it doesn't drive your personnel decisions, but I think it has to keep some of these personnel guys on edge a little bit more early in the season. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, and I think this American League is something we've never seen before, with literally every team in contention and feasibly you know, there's a way to see them get a postseason spot. So I in the National League, when there are five rebuilding teams or teams that you don't think are going to contend, yeah, you can kind of screw around with a couple of spots. But I think for the American League, all 15 teams should be putting their best teams out there from day one and hoping to get a good jump start on contending, because it's going to be crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you think there's any way, before we move on from the Twins here, because we've kind of gone down a Twins foxhole, is there any way that bullpen can be any good? Because I think, you know, there are some paths. You know, it's not an obvious, blatant road to success. But having May, Jepsen, and Perkins in a bullpen together and ostensibly all healthy will be the first time they've had those three guys together. You're talking about a full season of May in the bullpen instead of a half season. Moving Casey Fien a little further up the totem pole helps. You know, Fernando Abad is just 1 year removed from being pretty decent. You know, and then Ryan Pressly throws pretty hard, has some pretty good stuff, even if he doesn't quite have the results. Michael Tonkin, again, hard, throws hard, has some good stuff. Do you think there's a chance they could be middle of the pack bullpen-wise in the American League, or is it still going to be one of the shoddier bullpens in the league?
I like it. I do like the bullpen a lot. I think Trevor May is probably my favorite guy out there. But
right.
There's a lot of risk with Perkins just having not been particularly good lately. Jepsen, again, with the velocity. Abad, we don't know if he'll revert back to 2014 or become the homer machine that he was last season, but what I do like is all the guys they have down in the minors. They've got Alex Meyer, J.R. Graham, Chargaw, Melitakis, and then, of course, Nick Birdie, who is ridiculously hard-throwing. I like the reinforcements they have. So I don't know if this current bullpen will be great, but they've got plenty of guys that they can swap in and out if need be.
Yeah, I get the sense that it's going to look drastically different, on October 1 than it does April 1, and I think that's the goal. I also think that was the goal last year when they went to battle, and guys just didn't break through. And I think that's the reason why you saw Blaine Boyer spend the entire season on the 40-man roster and the 25-man roster, and Aaron Thompson got significant run early on. I think that's a big reason why. Now, I mentioned Ryan Pressly. We kind of want to go down this road of Rule 5 guys. I wonder what kind of roles they're going to have, and I feel like you're uniquely qualified to tell me. As far as the Padres with Jabari Blash, do you suspect that's going to be a guy getting a lot of playing time this year?
I think he'll at least start against lefties in left field, and that would shift Melvin Upton to center to cover for John Jay. He's a guy that has big power, a guy that's great to use pinch hitting, especially if you've got a more middle reliever type on the mound who's not going to necessarily strike you out, wants you to put the ball in play. His defense is apparently pretty decent for a guy of his size, especially. He'll definitely play against lefties. He's going to hit for a low average probably, but he walks. He'll hit some homers. He'll definitely play a good role on that team, and they're going to want to see what they can get out of him. They're not expected to contend, so he's not just going to ride the bench.
Now, they made a bunch of Rule 5 picks. Is he the only one expected to make the team?
They did return Blake Smith to the White Sox. He was an infielder-turned-pitcher, and now they've got two guys competing for what's probably their last bullpen spot. That would be Luis Perdomo from the Cardinals.
And not the former Twin Luis Perdomo.
Not the former Twin Luis Perdomo.
Briefly former Twin.
Yes, briefly former Twin. And they've got another one whose name I'm forgetting, but he's also a pitcher. He's reportedly probably has that spot. But they started out with four, which was very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Most I've ever seen a team go with. They acquired Blash and Perdomo via trade and selected the other two themselves. But they're going to want to see what they have. Perdomo, 22, has gotten lit up this spring. Probably isn't ready, but he could be a starter down the road, so they might pick him.
And now, who do you anticipate Blash's playing time will come at the expense of? I'm under the assumption, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, that the starting outfield is John Jay, Melvin Upton Jr., and Matt Kemp. And I don't know who is playing center, but yeah, is that the starting three?
It's probably going to be Jay in center, and then they're going to – I would anticipate that against lefties they would go Blash in left and then have Upton in center.
Yeah.
So technically, Blash's playing time would come at the expense of Jay, but Jay's not a guy that I would start against lefties anyway, so they've got a pretty good situation there. And then, of course, they might want to limit Kemp's time a little bit, injury concerns, so Blash could see a little bit of right field as well.
As a brief aside, are you expecting a bounce back from John Jay?
Yeah, I am. He had that I believe it was a wrist or hand injury that just really hampered him, and I liked that trade a lot for them. They got Judge Jerko's contract off the books.
And now that's going to be a good deal for the Cardinals too, I think, you know, if they can turn Jerko into even something relatively decent.
Yeah, it was a good trade where both teams had needs to fill, and they both got them filled. And I think Jay is a guy who can hit 280, but was superfluous for the Cardinals. And Jerko is a very nice platoon fit with Colton Wong at second base.
Yeah, I'm trying to imagine a team that needs outfielders less than the Cardinals, and the only team that really comes to mind is maybe the Pirates. So, you know, a good move for both sides. It's one of those good old-fashioned trades, kind of like the Twins and Yankees with Aaron Hicks and John Ryan Murphy, where you can fill a need for each side.
Yeah, it was a good move, and I think the Padres are looking to rebuild, but they've got a guy like Jay who they can flip at the deadline. And I hope they actually do make some moves at the deadline this year, because I don't think anyone's expecting them to do much.
Now, a guy that intrigues me on the Padres, I'm going to get kind of off the subject here, but I suspect that you're probably not going to mind too much. Their second baseman is Corey Spangenberg. I look at him a little bit on Fangraphs this offseason, and he just looks intriguing. Am I reading too far into this, or is there some interest in him as far as becoming a decent, everyday, full-time player?
He's a guy I like a lot. He ended up hitting .271 last season. He ended up OPSing.
He slugged almost .400.
Yep, and he ended up OPSing over .800 in the second half, which is obviously very intriguing. He's a guy who can also play a little bit of outfield. So he's another one of those high-floor guys who, you know, at the very least could be a super utility guy, but being a lefty always helps. And also he plays some decent defense, and he's a guy who could probably hit 12 home runs, steal 20 or so bases if given the chance. He's a guy who showed some more speed in the minors, stole 43 bases back in 2013. But, I mean, he's a guy who I do like a lot. I don't know if he's necessarily a starter, but he's definitely, you know, maybe a Ben Zobrist type at worst.
Do you have any hope for his double play partner, Alexei Ramirez, bouncing back at all? I mean, in some ways, he kind of is who he is. But at the same time, what the White Sox did in replacing him with Jimmy Rollins, the two guys had virtually identical triple slash lines last year. And I've seen fantasy guys say they expect more from Ramirez than Rollins. And I think that comes down to age more than anything, because obviously a guy hitting in the south side of Chicago is going to hit better than in Petco. But do you have hopes for Ramirez for any sort of renaissance, or is he just kind of keeping the spot warm for one of the kids down on the farm for San Diego?
He OPS 642 last year. I don't think he's going to be that bad, especially because he was at 757 in the second half. Is he going to be as good as he was when he won the Silver Slugger in 2010? Probably not, but I think he can rebound to maybe 700 OPS. You know, the defense is always going to be slightly above replacement level. He'll be a useful player, and I think he will bounce back a little bit. Petco is not necessarily the park to do it, but his trade value might be higher. You know, when your contract, his trade value might be even higher if he proves that he can hit and that he can hit in Petco.
Are you a little shocked that the White Sox moved on from him with just an option year available, or do you think they're ready to turn the page and hand the job to Tim Anderson here in the semi-near future?
Yeah, I was not at all surprised that they declined his option, because $10 million was way too much for him. We saw him end up getting $4 million in free agency, but they didn't appear to really even have much dialogue with him in the offseason, and that was what was surprising to me. They went with Rollins on a one-year contract when they could have had the familiarity on a one-year contract. So, yeah, it was a little surprising. I think what they like with Rollins is that he's probably more amenable to go to the bench if they do like what they see from Tim Anderson and the minors and call him up. So that's the only difference there. But yeah, I was surprised that they went with Rollins at half the cost of Ramirez instead of going with familiarity and maybe hoping Ramirez would be willing to go to the bench.
Do you think there's any chance they go to Saladino before they go to Anderson, or have they seen enough of Saladino to know that that's not going to do it for him?
I mean, I could see if Rollins is struggling and if Anderson isn't quite lighting up the minors, that they go with Saladino. Saladino was not bad last year. He just wasn't particularly good, and he's a guy who can field really, really well, and that, you know, that gives him a very high floor. He can steal some bases. He's a very good base runner. Between the majors and the minors, he was 33 for 37 in steals. So, yeah, I could see a situation where they hand it to him, but I don't see them, you know, letting him ride for the rest of the season. If let's say this is June 1st, Rollins isn't cutting it, I don't see him going with Saladino for the rest of the season. I would see him try and get maybe someone like Eric Ibar at the trade deadline.
Yeah, that makes sense. You teased a bit about Joey Ricard on the O's. Are you surprised to the extent that he's taken the job and run with it here in the spring, or do you anticipate that it's something he can hang on to? I mean, what you've kind of gone down this road a little bit, but what's your read on his future as far as a Baltimore Oriole?
I think they'll give him a pretty long leash to start the season just because he's a guy who's got a good glove and a guy who will always provide value on the bases. No, I would never have expected him to grab that left field job, no matter how good his spring was. I thought they were going to give it to Kim regardless, but of course, with recent developments, yeah, I think he'll have a pretty good shot at it unless they go out and get someone like David Murphy, who's now a free agent, after being cut by the Red Sox. But I think at this point, if they stay where they are, and if Kim isn't great in the minors, I think he could be their left fielder for the whole season.
What's his skill set like? Obviously, there's athleticism and some speed. Is he going to walk, or is he going to be like the rest of the Orioles and just completely scorn taking the free pass?
He's a guy who doesn't walk too much. He walked 69 times in 117 games in 2015. So he'll walk, just not. He's not going to put up ridiculous walk numbers. What's important is that he struck out only 75 times to those 69 walks last year. So he's always going to have a good strikeout to walk ratio. He's going to spray the ball gap to gap. He's going to run. To me, he's like Brandon Barnes with more plate discipline and with more upside. So he's a guy who, even if he doesn't necessarily perform super well as a starter, he'll settle in as a really good fourth outfielder option because he can play all three outfield positions and because he can run in field.
So what's going on with the guy in Philly? I keep hearing a lot about him as a Rule 5 pickup, too.
So Goodell was the first overall pick in the Rule 5 draft from the Rays. He's a guy who they're hoping can get their right field job eventually with Aaron Altherr out, with Cody Ashe out. They might go with Will Venable to start the offseason, but Goodell is a guy who had 12 homers, 28 steals, 10 triples last season down in Double-A for the Rays. So he's a guy who's pretty toolsy. He fields well. He runs well. The question is how well will those skills from Double-A translate to the majors? He's very Ricard-esque in that he's going to have a high floor because he's so good at the non-hitting skills that would keep him afloat. But we don't know if he's starting quality. He hasn't been great in spring training. He's OPSing 650. But he has struck out only 12 times in 60 plate appearances, which is a 20% rate, which is pretty good for a guy in his first spring training. So we'll just have to see how it goes. But I like what I've seen from him.
It feels like a classic toolsy guy with an opportunity. You know, obviously you made note of this, but pretty much, I guess you could say technically all the rebuilding teams are in the National League, so it's not too surprising that a lot of the Rule 5 steam that we're seeing is in the National League. Obviously, Ricard is an exception. But it kind of fits the stereotype of a guy, a toolsy guy with an opportunity, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, and there's another guy who I'd like to talk about, and that's Colin Walsh on the Brewers. He's probably my favorite of the Rule 5 picks. He's an infielder who's also dabbled a little bit in the outfield. He just really knows how to get on base. This spring he's hitting .244, but his OBP is .397, and he's a guy who just has a great eye. He's going to take some walks. He's a guy who hit 13 home runs last year at Double-A, so he can have some pop too, and he also stole 17 bases, so I like the pick a lot for Colin Walsh, and Scooter Jeanette's been hitting the ball really well, but Walsh is a guy who could settle in as the right half of the second base platoon if he proves that he can be good from the right side as well.
Well, crap, I was just about to ask you about some Brewers guys, starting with Jeanette. I took Jeanette in Scorsese as my second baseman. Obviously can't hit lefties, doesn't even really have a pulse against them, but I do have Jed Jerko as a utility guy as well. Do you like Jeanette from the right facing right-handed pitchers? Do you think there's a chance he can at least be a decent player, or is it kind of someone else's world there in Milwaukee?
No, God, please, no!
So the episode cut out here, and we had a couple of technical difficulties, but we got 35, 40 minutes of fantastic stuff in, and we're going to call this a wrap. A pause for now, a little part one action, and we'll definitely have John Becker back on the show very, very, very soon, and many times over the summer because, you know, he's off of school. We can do that. Follow Brandon on Twitter at Brandon_Warren. Follow the show at Midwest Swing Pond. Follow John Becker too. John, J-O-N, Becker, one word, _. John_Becker_baby. And check out everything at the Cold Omaha Podcast Network. Plenty of stuff going on. Don't Tread the Spread, Midwest Swing, as you listen to now. Wolves Wired, the Brand Soccer and Wild Podcast, as well as the Andy Lucanary Football Machine. We're tearing up the charts. We're tearing up the charts when I'm with you. But for Brandon Warren, John Becker, I'm producer Andy Carlson. Say goodbye. We'll see you next week, baby.
It's Sam Ekstrom, host of the Don't Dread the Spread podcast on the Cold Omaha Podcast Network. Myself, along with my partner in crime, Sam Verhulst, will guide you through the treacherous yet exhilarating world of sports betting. And we'll even branch out into politics and pop culture once in a while. Hey, you can bet on anything. Follow us on Twitter at SamSportsPicks. Subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher. It's Don't Dread the Spread. Turn your nickels into dimes.
Coming soon to the Cold Omaha Podcast Network, Mike Talks Big. It's the name of the show, the name of the Facebook page and the Twitter account. Opinion-based Minnesota sports talk and entertainment, plus trending topics and the cool part. Credentialed writers in all the major locker rooms, professional and college, that will be on the show regularly. Mike Talks Big. It's the name of the Facebook page, the Twitter account, and the name of the show. Coming soon to the Cold Omaha Podcast Network.
Hey guys, this is Tom Schreier, co-founder of ColdOmaha.com. Thank you for listening to the Cold Omaha Podcast Network. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes and leave us a comment and a rating. Also, don't forget to check out ColdOmaha.com to see all of our podcasts and read articles about your favorite teams in the Twin Cities. If you have any suggestions or comments on anything related to Cold Omaha, email us at editors@ColdOmaha.com or follow us on Twitter at ColdOmahaMN.
The Cold Omaha Podcast Network.